It appears the issues in the case brought by protesters against Humboldt County law enforcement and their use of pepper spray were so simple that jury members had an easy time making up their minds. They were not all of the same mind, however, and that eventually meant a hung jury. After less than 3 weeks in federal court in San Francisco, and on the very day the case had been scheduled to go to the jury, they had already deliberated, were, quote, hopelessly deadlocked, and Judge Susan Ilson declared a mistrial. Alicia Littletree, who also helped in the successful Barry Cherney case against the FBI, was a legal aide to the same team of lawyers in this case. She spoke with KMUD News this Wednesday shortly after the mistrial had been declared and gave us an idea of how quickly this much-awaited trial came to an end.
We did closing arguments yesterday, and it went out to the jury. They went out to lunch for a while and then came back at 2:30 and deliberated until 5 o'clock, at which time we heard that they felt that they were stuck. So the judge sent them home to sleep on it and brought them back the next morning, which was this morning. They deliberated for about two and a half hours and sent us another note that said, actually, they sent us a couple notes today. One of them was that they thought that they were stuck. The other one was they wondered if they could make a verdict based on majority rule instead of a unanimous verdict. And at that point, our team decided that would be okay with us, actually, there's a rule in the federal courts that you can actually, if both sides agree, take a verdict of a majority. And the judge seemed like she really wanted to encourage both sides to do that because, nobody wanted this to be a mistrial, but the defense wouldn't do it. So at that point, the judge took two attorneys from each side back into her chambers and tried to start talking settlement, and she was trying to cap the amount of money that maybe the defendants would be willing to settle if the amount of money had a cap on it, that they couldn't get too high of damages. And our attorney said, we're not interested in the damages. We want them to stop using pepper spray. And the defendant's lawyers refused to even go there. They said they have to be able to use this tool. So at that impasse, we came back out, sent the jury back in to deliberate longer, and we got another note shortly after, probably 20 minutes after that, that said they felt that they were just totally deadlocked, and they were not going to make an agreement or a unanimous verdict. At that point, the judge brought the jury in, asked them, for anyone who thought that there was anything else that they needed, more information or more evidence or, more direction, if anybody felt that that would help, and nobody raised their hand, they all shook their heads. And at that point, she declared a mistrial and discharged the jury. So the most interesting part of the day for us was really after that, when the jurors emerged from the chambers and we got to talk to them at last. It turns out that the jury deadlocked 6-2 in favor of the plaintiffs. That means 6 of the 8 jurors were on our side and thought that the police used excessive force. We got to talk to the jurors and the two women. It was two women who were opposed, and they when talking with them, they went straight to the defense lawyers and to Sheriff Philp first thing to talk to them and tell them, how they felt about this case. And what I was able to hear was pretty much a regurgitation of the defense's case. I mean, they thought that since the people were under arrest, they were resisting arrest when, they wouldn't obey the lawful orders. They felt that, one of them said that, that pepper spray, they should have just gave them a full blast of pepper spray, just fumigated them, and then maybe we wouldn't even be here. I mean, it was basically that they took every reason they could possibly take to support the police. And we're finding that that is really the hard part of this case, is that for some people, and a lot of people in this country, I guess, it's, police can do no wrong. So overcoming that, to try to tell them that there is a need to limit police use of force, is a real trick. But, I guess next step is to schedule the next trial in the case and go on back to court.
Well, now, that's interesting. So it was evenly split, so it means that all the men and two of the women thought that the police had overstepped their bounds.
That's right. And the first person that I spoke to from the jury was a woman from Livermore, and she said, the first thing she said about the police's behavior was she thought that it was obviously excessive, and that she really thought the way that the police touched the women was very inappropriate. So I think that part of it did resonate with her. But these other two, the two women who were against us, it was just really obvious that no matter what we said, they were not going to go along with us. I mean, they even had the nerve to say that when people were watching the video and weeping, that they were not genuinely crying. When people were testifying, they weren't real, and you know, they just didn't like the fact that these people were out protesting. It wasn't going to go any further than that for them. They were going to find anything that they could find to support the police. And that's a really scary thought if you think about it, that people would refuse to use their own judgment, their own sense, and limit what the police can do.
Did in speaking with the jurors who had, in fact, voted on your side of the issue, voted for conviction, was there a sense of how difficult it was to get to that point? I mean, I'm actually kind of surprised that they discovered so early on that they just wouldn't be able to change their minds.
Everyone that I talked to had seemed like they had a sense of their position from the beginning, and it didn't change. So, and that meant, like, during the trial. And the judge admonishes them not to make up their minds, you know, before they heard all the evidence. But I think the people who were with us, and the people who were against us were against us, and that's the way it was all the way through. And the 6-2 was the vote when they took their first vote, and it never changed. So, you know.
What's the mood among the plaintiffs at this point?
Actually, you know, people are disappointed, but nobody's discouraged. I think people are determined to see this case through. And I mean, like myself, you know, I'm surprised that I'm not so, I'm disappointed, but I'm ready to keep fighting. So, and that's kind of the attitude that I'm sensing from everybody else, you know, and I was kind of like keeping my mouth shut and listening to the plaintiffs to see what they were going to say about it, and almost all of them were talking about the next trial, so, you know, I think we're in for the long haul on this one.
Now, you said that most, if not all of them, were pretty set in their ways right from the beginning. Aside from what that woman from Livermore said, was there anything else you gleaned from other jurors and what their thoughts were about the issue?
Yeah, well, let's see. There was a gentleman from China on the jury, and he, I didn't hear this, but Spring told me this, that he had said that he kind of congratulated them for causing such a disturbance, and he said, in China, you know, we just use chains, and they just cut through the chains, and you guys really caused a disturbance, you know, in kind of his broken English. That was really, really great to hear that, you know, talk about smashing stereotypes. Then there was an 82-year-old psychologist on the jury who just seemed like this wise, you know, this wise being, and he was actually the foreperson of the jury, and he said there's just no way they were going to change those women's minds. Another man that I talked to from Napa said that he was just very moved by the videos and by he just thought it was very obviously excessive force, and you know, it's really a very simple case. You know, it's not like the last case we did with the FBI and the Judy Berry case. This one is just very straightforward, and it boils down to the videos. And people who are looking for a reason to justify what the police did will use any reason they can find. So that's what the defense did. They just tried to give them reasons. And two of them bought it. And you know what's so crazy is that they were Democrats. Those two women who went against us were Democrats. These weren't even like dyed-in-the-wool conservatives. These people were liberals. And, you know, so. But also there were a couple of Latinos on the jury, but and the one Chinese man, but there were no other people of color. There were no African Americans on the jury, and we actually we objected to that at the beginning because our legal team put on the record that it's, you know, people of color are the people who disproportionately are familiar with police excesses in this way, and, you know, to have a predominantly white jury, you know, it's definitely going to be a challenge for, you know, making people believe that police maybe aren't always on your side.
Well, I know that there are sciences built up around the makeup of juries, and I'm just wondering, as you looked at those jurors day in and day out for those a few weeks, Alicia, did anybody surprise you by how they voted? I mean, did you know already who would be more sympathetic to your cause than others?
I think we were shocked. I think most people were shocked by the way certain people voted. The of the two women who were against us, one of them was like the most stoic. We called her the Sphinx. I mean, she was completely stoic, stone-faced, never got a sense from her, which, you know, to me was not a good thing. So I was always a little concerned about her. The other woman who voted against us, I totally thought she was with us. And then, of course, some of the people who voted with us, we'd been convinced that they were totally against us, and we were totally concerned about them. And, you know, it just goes to show, like, you never can tell with a jury like that. And I learned that in the last trial because, you know, there were some people who there was, like, a woman who wore an American flag shirt into court a few times, and I really just thought we were not going to prevail in that last case, and yet they all came along with us. So in this case, I just kind of try to remind myself, you know, that these are human beings and that, you know, that you can't tell anything from their facial expressions or their body language or anything like that. It must be a very awkward thing to be sitting in this court with all eyes on you and people trying to pick apart your every move and your every facial expression and all of that. So I just try to think nice thoughts about all of them, and now I can think mean thoughts about the two little people who went against us.
This issue has gone through various kinds of trials. It's obviously a civil procedure. You're going to do it again. It's also had different legal teams. Is this team going to stick with it?
As far as I know, I mean, we have a lot of... Nobody's jumping ship today, I'll tell you that much. We kind of like go kind of back to the beginning. In the legal process, we have to go through the whole pretrial motion thing again, and we may file, you know, there's several different strategic options we have at this point, whether it's asking the judge to just make a judgment based on the law or trying to reopen the discovery process or, you know, who knows what's going to happen from here. But I do think everybody here is still determined to see this case through. And obviously we're all very committed to the cause. And I think that, you know, Sheriff Philp and Sheriff Lewis are here, and they've been here through the whole trial, and I think that this verdict, though not a victory in the legal sense of a, you know, a unanimous verdict, is still a strong message. I mean, 6-2, and the six people who really thought what they did was wrong felt very strongly about it, and the two women who wouldn't change their minds and go along with the majority, you know, they were in the very much the minority, and I think this should be a very clear message to Philp, Sheriff Philp, who still is in a position of power up in Humboldt, that this is not an acceptable practice. And I also think that, you know, he's up for re-election again, in 2 years, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I think the strongest message that can be sent to him is that, you know, if he wants to use these kinds of tactics, the people will take his job away from him. And I think that's going to be a really important thing as we go forward, that he knows that people really feel strongly about this and that his job could be at stake.
And again, that was Alicia Littletree, a legal aide with the team for the plaintiffs in that case. Again, the jury 6-2 in favor of the plaintiffs. That was not enough. They vowed they will go back to try it one more time.